Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Unhappy Hour, the show where we bitch about all the things we love to hate every single week. I'm your host, Matt Bellassai. I'm here in my home studio recording far, far away from my producer, Barry Finkel. Hi, Barry.
Hey, Matt. How's it going? How's your week?
I don't know if people will be able to hear this. Probably not, because, yeah, I have a professional microphone that is very good at picking up my voice and nothing else, which is why you get my nasal tones directly into your ears so beautifully. But the ice cream truck has decided to park outside my window, as it does on many days. And as the weather gets warmer, I get nearer to committing absolute felony murder.
At least you're like 13, 14 floors up. I'm on the second floor. It's like the ice cream truck is in my apartment.
I can never tell, though, based on, I guess there aren't a lot of other tall buildings in this direction, but sometimes I'm like, does it actually amplify it because it's just bouncing off of, I don't know how sound works.
Okay, sure, but I can tell you for a fact that it is way louder in my apartment, okay? So now not only are we fighting the ice cream truck men, we are fighting each other.
I will weaponize ice cream. Don't even try and stop me, okay? I won't even ask you how you're doing because we're in a fight.
Fine.
So we'll just get on with today's episode. What's coming up today? We're going to kick things off, as always, with Worst Things First, where I shout about the stupidest, most ridiculous, worst news of the week. After that, we are diving deep into all of the ways our bodies are failing us. Just because we're young and hot, it doesn't mean our bodies aren't falling apart on the inside and the outside, frankly. My body is an absolute wasteland.
Yeah, John Mayer definitely did not write that song for me. My body, no. Not a wonderland.
It's a wonderland for sickos.
It's a perverts. Psychotic circus.
And finally, we've got television writer, playwright, author, R. Eric Thomas on the pod. We get into greeting cards, being sexy on the internet, and so much more. He was so much fun. I'm so excited for everybody to hear that interview. So let's get into it. Let's do it. Let's start the show.
Oh my God.
See, because my body is failing. Get it? All right, worst things first, let's chat about the worst news of the week. First, a 71-year-old woman riding with her daughter on Interstate 95 in Florida.
Only in Florida.
Suffered a gashed forehead when a turtle smashed through her windshield.
No.
And struck her.
Oh my Lord. It's not raining cats and dogs. No, 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 no. It is raining one single turtle.
In Florida, you have no idea what's going to fall from the sky. From one minute to the next, anything could fall.
Frozen iguanas, turtles.
There are reptiles raining down from the skies in Florida. There is no escape. So I guess the daughter immediately pulled over, got help from another motorist, but apparently they had no idea what actually flew through their windshield until, because there's like a 911 transcript where the other motorist is like, yo, there's a turtle in here. And the daughter is like, a turtle? An actual turtle? And yeah, I guess all they knew is, I mean, to be fair, if something came like flying through my windshield, hit my mom in the face, she was like bleeding profusely next to me, I don't know if I would inspect. I mean, I gotta be honest, I would look at what hit her. I think I would notice. I don't want to say that I am better than this daughter, or that I care more about my mother, or that I know more about flying turtles, but I feel like I would notice a flying turtle.
Right. Yeah. Although turtles from the back do kind of just look like rocks, because they're like kind of meant to camouflage, you know?
That's true. If he kind of went fully retracted
first,
right?
Yeah.
If he had his foreskin on, there'd be no way of knowing. I almost feel like we've heard this exact story before. So I don't think this happens infrequently. It's also not unusual for like rocks and other debris to crash through windshields.
Sure.
But you've never seen that traffic sign, have you?
Uh-uh.
You know, a lot of times they'll say, oh, falling rocks. Oh, crossing deer. But they never say, watch out for flying turtles.
No. How did the turtle get there? Do we know? Do we have any idea?
Yes. So I don't know who said this, but the turtle was likely crossing the interstate and got knocked into the air by another vehicle.
Oh,
this was like a Mario Kart situation.
Exactly. Yes, that is exactly what it is.
Someone, there was a red shell. Okay. It hit one person, ricocheted off, and hit this grandmother in the face. She's fine, as far as I know. I like how the daughter was on the phone with the 911 operator also and was like, I swear to God, this lady has the worst luck of anything. That's a literal quote that she gave 911. Which I would also say about my mother, just sarcastically being like, if anyone was going to get hit with the turtle, it's this gal. Anyway, next. Love this story. A man and a woman were all set to host their wedding weekend at a beautiful suburban Fort Lauderdale estate. That's right.
Only in Florida.
I mean, this is a straight wedding, so you already know something horrific is going to be. Something bad's coming because a man and a woman are getting married. Yeah, they chose this beautiful suburban Fort Lauderdale estate. It had everything, okay? A bowling alley, a swimming pool
what?
With a waterfall, a hot tub, tennis courts, a gazebo, an 800-foot bar.
Okay, sign me up. RSVP, yes.
The groom said it was God's plan that the couple get married there. So they invited all their friends and family. The day of their wedding comes, and the groom shows up in the morning to set up. Turns out the couple does not own this mansion and had no permission to be there. And the actual owner, who was home, was like, get the fuck out of here.
Wow. Icons. Absolute icons.
Exactly.
The amount of planning that goes into a wedding, you know, like the confidence that is within this groom and bride, and frankly, within God, is
right.
Remarkable.
Just the idea that some couples, I mean, I've never been married myself. I've never planned a wedding. But, you know, based on the media, based on pop culture, I do know that choosing a wedding venue is often a point of high contention.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of stakes involved.
It's one of the first things you do.
Yeah. Months in advance.
Years
in advance sometimes. You have to get your reservation. And this couple said, fuck a reservation. You know what we're going to do? Show up. And then what are you going to do? Turns out what they're going to do is call the police and not let you in. Yeah, so they sent out these like beautiful elaborate invitations, I guess inferring that they had booked this venue. Contrary to what the invitation said, the actual owner, one Mr. Nathan Finkel.
Oh shit. You think we're related? You think I can get us access to this mansion? There aren't that many Finkels out there, let me tell you.
His name is spelled the same, the exact same.
All right, Nathaniel, I'll be giving you a call.
He said that he never gave them permission. According to the South Florida Sun Sentinel, he was stunned when the groom showed up. And so he called the police. He was like, I have people trespassing on my property. They keep harassing me, calling me. They say they're having a wedding here and it's God's message.
Oh my God.
I don't know what's going on. All I want for it is for it to stop. And they're sitting at my property right at the front gate right now. Imagine showing up somewhere and being like, I have full permission to be here because God said it was okay. I mean, actually, people do that all the time. So officers told the groom that he would have to leave, and he did, and they didn't file charges. Apparently, the guy who owns it, his late father was an early IHOP franchisee.
Ooh.
So they got that money. They got that pancake money.
The most delicious kind.
They were able to afford this beautiful estate that they've been trying to sell for a couple of years. It's listed, I guess, over $5 million right now.
I think this would have been a fantastic opportunity for this couple to buy the mansion.
Well, I guess he like staked it out. So the guy, the groom, who he like posed as a potential buyer, he toured it several months in advance. According to a lawyer for the, I don't know, group of properties, I guess, I don't know, some lawyer. And then a few months later, the groom asked Mr. Finkel if he could use his backyard for his wedding. And Mr. Finkel was like, no. And then they just showed up anyway.
God, I need some of this confidence in my life. I just love it.
Yeah, this is really what they tell. It's mind over matter in all cases.
Never take no for an answer.
If you believe that this is where your wedding is going to be, that's where it's going to be. And finally, this is an update, really. After more than 250 days on the run, a beefalo, which is a cross between a bison and a domestic cattle, a cow, I guess.
Wow, beefalo is a great name.
Yeah,
That's hilarious. And also sad to name it after, like, what we call it when it's dead.
Right.
Like, it's like calling a human a corpse.
What came first, though? Like, does the word beef automatically imply that it's been like killed?
I've never heard anyone talk about a live cow as beef unless they're like, that's gonna be some good beef one day.
Honestly, if I were a male stripper, beefalo would be my name. Welcome to the Beefalo Show, everybody. Here's my dick. Anyway, a beefalo nicknamed Buddy that had been roaming the woods in Connecticut since it escaped on its way to a slaughterhouse has been captured. I don't know if you remember this story.
Yeah.
There was this cow on the loose in Connecticut. Everybody had just been like, yeah, that's our loose cow. Like the police kind of gave up on getting him back. They were just like, yeah, if you see him, that's the Connecticut loose cow.
Yeah.
And now, sadly, after 250 days, Buddy has been caught. So the beefalo, yeah, a cross between a bison? What is a bison? Isn't that a buffalo? That's a buffalo.
Yeah.
Why are they crossing them?
I have no idea. This feels like liger territory.
Is that what we're eating?
Scientists are up to something. I'll tell you that.
Anyway, he escaped from his handlers on August 3rd, a day after my birthday.
Oh my God.
So he's been loose for as long as I've been 30.
Wow.
Which feels like forever. Plymouth police announced that he was apprehended last week, posting the animal's picture on social media with the word captured stamped across it in red letters. Okay, assholes.
He's not a fucking criminal.
He did nothing wrong except escape his death.
Yeah.
This is bullshit. Get it? This is beefalo shit.
Beefalo shit. Absolute beefalo shit.
Get this. Buddy had wandered onto a farm and was hanging out with some local cows when the farm owner snagged him and then got him into a trailer and turned him in.
Okay, snitch.
This narc. Why don't you go fuck off, narc?
This beefalo buddy just wanted to hang out with your cows, have a nice good time, and you're just going to take him away?
Yeah. Also, you free cow. He just wandered in amongst your cows. You could have just folded him into the community, but no, you had to rat him out. This is why snitches get stitches. Okay. The other thing is that authorities, I guess, said that they would not like fold him back into the the slaughterhouse.
Oh, so good, good.
He's heading to Massachusetts, where he will be sent to, the Critter Creek Farm Sanctuary in Gainesville, Florida. Oh, that old turtle, flying turtle will kill him.
He makes it all the way there, only to get there and just be whacked in the head with a flying turtle.
Shout out to Buddy the Beefalo and to my new stripper name. And that's it for this week's Worst Things First. If you want to hear and see even more stories that were brutally cut from this week's episode, because yes, we can only fit in so much, and then Barry and the other editors and producers go in and they cut out all of my jokes and they cut all of my stories, and I take all of the beautiful content that was cut and put it up for all of the lovely people on Patreon. So you can head to Patreon at patreon.com/MattBellassai. And see it all there. Next, we're diving deep inside of us in our decomposing bodies.
Deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive. Deep dive,
deep dive,
deep dive, deep dive, deep
dive. Well, it's another week, it's another day, it's another year. And with each passing moment, with each throbbing muscle spasm, I am reminded yet again of the utter frailty of my human shell. Because even though, yes, I am a beautiful genius who is getting hotter every single day of his existence, I'll say it, I'm also a rickety pile of aching muscles and cracking bones, all of which are just slowly falling apart piece by piece. So for today's deep dive, we are diving deep into our failing bodies. Basically, this is that episode of Magic School Bus where they go inside Arnold's body, except instead of Arnold's young, you know, child healthy body, we're going into my dumping ground. So let's get into it. First, really this whole deep dive sprung from the fact that earlier this week when I was doing my little workout, just trying to lift my weights, grow my ass, yet again, I threw out my back.
I also was doing some push-ups, like with a personal trainer watching me form beautiful. And yet somehow I fully kinked my neck to the point where I had to have a quote unquote emergency acupuncture appointment. So we're doing great.
Yeah. The unfortunate thing about my injury is that it was fully my fault. Not fully. I will never take full responsibility for anything. And I'll say that proudly. but I did, yeah. I had two, I was bending down. There were two 75-pound dumbbells, which I should never have been trusted with in the first place. And that was the real mistake, is that someone trusted me to do two 75-pound dumbbells. That's 150 pounds, people. Do the math.
No, thank you.
And I had set them on the ground, and I bent down to pick them up. And I tried to, like, squat and pick them up with my butt. And immediately I felt that spot that was fucked up last year got fucked up again. It's a sick cycle. Because I guess apparently my spine is just made out of, like, soggy popsicle sticks. I don't understand why my bones are not made of stronger stuff.
I've said it before, I will say it again. My main exercise goal is to just make my muscles strong enough to hold up my skeleton. And yet somehow that is still too much to ask, and my body refuses to let it happen.
Yeah, I don't understand how our bodies are just, you were built for one purpose. Like, the bones are supposed to be strong. The muscles are supposed to hold that up. Where did we go wrong? I guess a lot of ways.
Yeah, like so many.
All I will say is that it is very important for me as a homosexual to be able to arch my back. My lower back should be able to be a full U.
In the cat-cow position, you are a cow. Once again, Beefalo strikes again.
I should be able to get to full cow. My belly button should be able to touch the ground. My ass should be fully in the air. And that's what I'm going for. Next, I can't sleep through the night without urinating approximately once every 10 fucking minutes. And before you get at me, anybody listening, about my prostate, okay, I'll have you know she gets regular massages. And if anything were amiss, we would know about it, okay? So it is not a prostate issue.
Frequent urination, especially when you are asleep. That's not how I want to say that.
Right. To be perfectly clear, I'm not urinating in bed.
Having to get up to pee multiple times in the night is something that I feel was like stereotyped for quote unquote old people, but I was not aware that old started at approximately 25. Like, that doesn't seem fair and also doesn't seem old. And those who are youthful shouldn't have to deal with shit like this. I'm not 25, but I also am not old enough to warrant the amount of times I pee during the day. Also, just putting that out, it's unusual.
Yeah, literally in the pilot of Golden Girls, there is a joke about how they have to stop drinking any liquids at like 5 p.m. Otherwise, they'd be up all night.
Which my doctor has recommended to me to not drink liquids after like 9 o'clock. And I'm like, but a sip? What if I get thirsty? It like, how could it get worse? How could it get worse than this? If I am this way at 29, how what is going to happen when I am 55?
I keep having to like experiment basically with stopping drinking anything earlier and earlier. I mean, famously, I know people will also be thinking, well, Matt, didn't you just say that you're trying to drink 4 liters of water throughout the day? Maybe that's fucking why. And yeah, you'd be absolutely right. I have my big old jug of water right here. But the problem is, how am I supposed to both drink a bunch of water and not be up all night? It's like, you know, you're solving one problem and then creating another.
Real catch 22.
Next, I can officially just no longer stand up from any sitting position without sounding like a moose in distress.
I have wondered if this is one of those things that like, is it that I actually need to express this feeling, or did I just grow up with like my parents and other family members around doing this that I'm like, this is just learned behavior?
Maybe. I do think, I feel like dad noises are like a common thing, which is an older gentleman who sits in an armchair and makes a series of groans and grunts and coughs. And I don't feel like I'm like learning that from anybody. I think it's just what happens to my body. I just start making noises.
I see.
I just, everything hurt. You're like, you can hear the sound of things like realigning or attempting to realign when I stand up. Like it sounds like I'm stepping on a box of spaghetti that I spill on the ground. Next, I'm officially at the age where like, if I fall, there's really no guarantee that I'll get back up.
I've seen 2 people fall in the park in the past week. One was a sweet old lady who just like fully dominoed down, like didn't, no bent knees, like a dog came up behind her and she just domino fell down. And then this morning, another guy, a dog came behind him and he was knocked down. And I was just like, I'm next. Rule of threes. It's going to happen. And it's not going to be pretty.
What just came rushing back to me right now is a line from our Stoned episode that you cut that I just remembered, which is me saying the one thing I miss most about the pre-pandemic world was watching people fall down escalators.
Yeah, I cut it because you went on for like 5 fucking minutes about this. And it was insane.
I cannot imagine. I do specifically recall seeing a woman fall down an escalator at Penn Station. And I, if that happened to me, like there's no way I would ever stand back up again.
Irreversible damage for sure.
Let's see. Next. My eyesight is just getting worse by the day. And I really refuse to accept that it's because I stare at a screen for 24 hours. Consecutively, like there is no part of my day where a screen is not involved in some way, shape, or form.
Or multiple.
Yeah, usually at this point I'm using one screen to deflect from another screen. There's no point at which I'm not looking at blue light. Why are my glasses so thick still? Okay, I feel like if we can make a 1 terabyte memory chip the size of a squirrel dick, okay, we can make my glasses thinner.
I completely agree, especially when contacts exist. Like, if you can fit all of that onto one single little disc that goes onto my eyeball, you certainly can make the glass thinner.
Yeah, exactly. I remember being so self-conscious. It has gotten better, even mm-hmm. as my prescription has gotten worse, which is what happens. These your eyes just get lazy. I remember them telling us that. It was like, yeah, your eyesight will get worse every time after you get glasses, because your eyes just get accustomed to the help. And finally, there's really just no telling when my digestive system will fully turn against me. I would say we're not friends, but we're not enemies. That we just kind of coexist. And I
roommates, and I, really.
Yeah. I hope that we're on the same page, but there's really no way of knowing when she might decide to just turn against me, to rebel and decide, hey, today we decided that this one egg that you ate is going to violently come out of you for the next 72 hours.
I've like paid even more attention to this because the amount of like COVID screening surveys or questionnaires that you have to do in order to like go into some places and like doctor appointments and stuff. And a lot of the symptoms are like diarrhea, upset stomach stuff. If you have two of these things, you need to let us know. Right. You won't be allowed in. And I'm like, okay, but what if you have it like every day?
Yeah. What if that is your normal?
I'm like, what are you supposed to do?
That's what my mom always says about having a fever. Cause she's like, if they took my body temperature and it was 98.6, I would have a fever. My temperature is usually like 96 degrees. And I was like, what is your body even? I don't understand. My mom is more a robot than person at this point. Anyway, the point is every single day my body turns against me in some new horrific way and I'm sick of it. And as much as I try to do what's best for him, he has the audacity to make it about himself. And I for one, am over it. Anyway, that's it for this week's Deep Dive. Next, we got our Eric Thomas on the pod right after this commercial break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
My guest complainer today is writer, playwright, author R. Eric Thomas. You've seen his iconic pieces on Elle.com, Time, The New York Times. His book is called Here For It, or How to Save Your Soul in America. He writes for Dickinson on television. So much stuff. Welcome,
Too
Eric.
Much.
Yeah, I'm just like, I ran out of steam. There was so much stuff.
I mean, I got sick of myself. I was like, all right, enough. Like, how much attention does this dude need? And the answer is all of it.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to be here.
You deserve. Well, we always start by asking, what is one thing you hate that everybody else loves?
Okay. Well, I hate to say it. I hope it don't sound ridiculous, but I do hate greeting cards.
Okay.
And like, no offense to anybody who's ever sent me a greeting card, mm-hmm. but a greeting card is work. Picking out a greeting card is very hard. And then, like, I'm a writer, so I have to, like, then write somebody, like, a heartfelt message right. inside of the card. There's, I don't know if white people know about this, but there's this line of, like, mahogany greetings, like, black people cards.
Uh-huh.
Do you know about this?
I don't know.
This is wild. I mean, it's in, like, Walgreens. They're in all the stores, maybe only in, like, black areas. I don't know.
Okay.
But, like, they're cards, like, with black people on the cards. There are African proverbs inside, or like, the father is the backbone of the family, and I thank the Lord for you.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, I feel not black enough for the black cards. So there's stress. And then they just, greeting cards just take up residence all over the house.
Yeah.
And how long are you supposed to keep a greeting card? I don't know. My husband has a very different opinion than I do.
Right.
My opinion is like, 5 minutes? All right. This is very sweet. I appreciate it. I feel like Scrooge when I'm like, I don't like greeting cards, but it's like, it's stressful. It's just, it's a strange thing. I like letters. I like notes.
Mm-hmm.
A greeting card, I don't know. It's stressful.
I feel the same way. I always feel a little bit guilty when it's just a greeting card and they haven't really added any of their own kind of panache to it. And I feel bad about, like, you know, you take the check out and then you throw the card away. Sometimes exactly. It lives on the counter for like 5 minutes. Yeah, like you said. My experience with greeting cards is that my mom would always send me to the store to pick out cards for whatever gift that she was purchasing. And so I, mm-hmm. like a young child, would have to embody my mother's personality in order to pick the right greeting. And it was really make her, like, I often made the wrong call.
I understand that. That's the other thing. Like, I'm like, who are the people who are sitting at Hallmark trying to channel me? And then, like, you know, I want to, like, whenever I buy, like, my dad a birthday card, I want to, like, get him one that says, like, for the bar mitzvah boy.
Right.
But, like, that's my sense of humor. My dad would be like, what? Did you mix this up? I did get a greeting card. We bought a house during, like, in June, like, in the middle of the pandemic. Uh-huh. And so, like, we have a friend who's older. She's in her 90s. She's amazing, sharp and spry, but she couldn't leave her house. And so she wanted to send us a housewarming card. Mm-hmm. And so all she had at her house were bereavement cards.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you enter a phase of life where that is the card of choice.
Yeah.
And so she sent us a card that said, with sympathy. And then she crossed it out and wrote not in parentheses next to it. And I was like, this is the best greeting card I've ever received in my life.
You make the greeting card work for you, not the other way around.
Thank you. You have to show ownership over the greeting card. Otherwise, I don't know what to do with it. It stresses me out.
Yeah. I've talked before about how I often feel in competition with, I have an older brother, when we're giving gifts. It's never overt. We never acknowledge that it is a competition, but of course it's a competition of, like, who's giving the best gift. And my approach is all, like, I'm a horrible gift giver. I'm just like, okay, I'll buy you something nice and fancy, and you should just appreciate that because it's nice and fancy. And my brother will get something, like, sentimental, and it will be, And then my mom will cry. And often it is the card that is make or break. And right. I'm like, well, he didn't do that. He just bought it from Hallmark, okay?
Right. It is amazing. Like, it's like somebody is, like, churning these out. They're like, all right, let's see. Mom's love, being reminded that you were a child once and being thanked for all their selfless service. Bingo, bango, send it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't get to earn those emotional points. Those emotional points were hard earned by some writer in wherever. I want to go to the Hallmark warehouse.
Yeah,
office.
The factory where they do whatever.
Right.
They put their writers under duress so that they have to. They're at peak emotional vulnerability at all times.
I feel like that's either a really healthy work environment or the most toxic, where everyone's just like a nerve walking around. They're like, what if somebody lost a dog? And you're like, hold on, I'm being inspired. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
The other thing is, not to beat this dead horse, although they deserve it, is greeting cards are too expensive. Nobody.
Yes. Oh my God.
Any card over 99 cents is not, mm-hmm. is not where I don't, they have the audacity to slap like a $6.99 price tag on some of these cards, and it's
come
not
on
worth
now.
It.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. I remember when I reached the point in life where I was like, well, I have so much guilt that I'm going to buy the $6.99 card, but I don't make any money. So it was a sacrifice, which hurt even more, which also made me feel like I was being a better son, friend, partner, boyfriend, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you have to ask yourself, this is card stock. What are we really paying for?
Yeah.
I guess creativity, which I appreciate, by my book.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But at the same time, like, I don't know. There are times where I'm just like, write, hey, thinking of you on an index card and throw it out your car window, uh-huh. like throw it on my porch, and I'll appreciate it.
What is the stance on like a postcard?
See, I like a postcard.
Okay.
It's nice because like there's a limit. It's like a postal tweet.
Yeah.
You can't really go long. And it's sort of like, hey, I was at this place and I thought of you.
Right.
Putting a stamp on something is a lot of work. Like, that's not part of my spiritual journey.
No.
But, like, I do appreciate getting postcards because you don't have to do anything. You put it on your fridge.
Right.
It's pretty. And you don't have to respond because you're like, I don't have a postcard. I didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. I do love the idea that, like, a postcard, it is just like an open-faced letter. Like, anybody who comes across it can just see. It's like a public DM.
It's true.
Maybe we should lean into that. Like, you know, just fully X-rated, like, you know, pour your heart out, sexual postcards. You know, the mail service workers have been through a difficult year, and
yes.
you know, they deserve to see our secrets every now and then.
I agree. Yeah, like, you know, no, we've gone through a year of DMing people. Let's pivot to just openly saying it. Like, just say whatever you need to say at all times. I'm very, like, particularly on a postcard.
I'm a little worried about that. That is just playing some free association here. I feel like everyone is kind of preparing for slutty summer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm like an innocent, scared baby who is not prepared for the level of just like raw vulnerability that is about to be this summer. I don't know.
Yeah. I think everyone's got real, real big plans, real hard plans, real deep plans. And it's a lot to negotiate because it's like a lot of it's like, oh, we're going to party all the time, or oh, we're going to hook up all the time, or oh, we're just going to hug and cry. And I'm like, this is a really full agenda.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just not sure that I don't know. I didn't RSVP for all of
no,
this.
No, yeah.
Have to say.
I feel like I'm going to be like shaking in a corner with a, you know, that it's that gif of Bethany. I keep thinking of it, of her like shaking and trying to drink a glass of water. Yeah. But what reminded me of that thought was that I feel like that sense of just like, maybe I should just put it all out, like, you know, postcard my life, be raw and sexual, just, you know, go for it. Let the mail carrier see it.
I mean, you might as well. And here's the thing, but like, you know, I came into this podcast with the idea, you know, with the question, what's the thing that I hate that everybody else loves?
Uh-huh.
And my original answer was going to be your sexy Instagram. Because
wow.
I mean, no offense. Like, it's cake. It's you, Winnie the Poohing. You're very sexy. It's very frustrating to me. But then I was like, do I hate it or do I love it? And I'm like, oh, this is getting complicated. I should probably not say any of this. And here I am.
We should have had you on so much sooner, frankly, for the state of my mental health. Well, I thank you, first of all. Second of all, the premise of something that everybody else loves that you hate, I question that, whether that fits in. Because, listen, not everybody is on board with my my thighs on Instagram.
I find that hard to believe. I mean, I've been on the internet, so I believe that, but I'm also sort of like, no, this is an objective good. You, Winnie the Poohing, in your little square cut briefs. Oh my God, get out of here. I'm obsessed with it. Because you're also not like gratuitous. You're not like, hey guys, we're on a journey together.
Right, right.
It's, you gotta, like, every day is a struggle, but we're gonna make it. You're like, hi, I look good. And I'm like, Ugh, it's
I'm trying to navigate these waters because they're new for me. I said in my caption, I've never really been like a briefs person. In my mind, underwear has always covered up almost as much as what was over it. And so I'm trying to embrace that side and let the girls breathe a little bit.
It's a beautiful journey to watch. I'm very curious, like, are you learning new ways of moving through the world as you see people reacting to you in different ways? Or are you like, I'm doing the authenticity thing and this is just more skin with it?
I was thinking about this earlier today, actually. My approach historically has been I like to present the worst version of myself on the internet. Mm-hmm. And then when people meet me in real life, they'll think, oh, wow, he is way more put together than I actually thought. So it's always like I like to set expectations very low and then try mm-hmm. to live my life, you know, better than how I present it. But love now it. I think I'm more aware because I've been on like a fitness journey and I'm like, okay, I kind of like I'm liking the way I look. RuPaul has this thing where he has talked to drag queens who are like, you have to stop thinking about trying to like look sexy. Like you're never going to be like a good, funny drag queen if in the back of your mind, you're always like, okay, do I look hot doing this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now that is in the back of my mind where I'm like, okay, I want to post this picture, but like, do I look good in it? And that should not be a thought. Like it should, but it is.
It's definitely not your fault. It's the culture's fault.
Exactly.
That is an interesting tension. I don't particularly deal with that tension, unfortunately.
I'll be on this journey alone. That's fine. That's fine. I'll suffer.
No, I mean, I wish I did. I wish I was like, oh, do I look hot or do I look funny? I'm like, no, it's always just funny. but it's like, I do find that fascinating. And it's interesting, the people like, you know, like you, Mateo Lane, Joel Kim Booster, who are very good at sort of being like, I'm hot and funny.
Well,
and isn't that interesting? But you're pulling from different pools. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like being hot is camp. And so, like, if you're like, oh, can you imagine? Look, I'm showing you my nipple. Is that crazy? But, like, if you're serious about it, I don't know. I'm going to stop, you know, like, I'm blowing smoke directly up here for no reason.
It's what I need, though. So I thank you.
I don't know. It's very interesting. I guess it's also funny, you know, being sort of known for comedic content and then sort of showing up and being like, by the way, I do have testicles. Like, I always think about, you know, because I have an audience who's, like, drawn to me through my columns mm-hmm, and through my mm-hmm. book. Every once in a while, I have something that I'm like, this is a little saucy,
right.
You know? And I'm like, did the people who came to me because I wrote about Maxine Waters, do they want to see, like, me in a Speedo in Provincetown? Probably not.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is going to be a leap, but I feel like, on a broader scale, what Lil Nas X has experienced in the mm-hmm. last couple of weeks is like, you know, so many people associate him with Old Town Road and this kind of right. like G-rated cowboy. and then he came out and was twerking on Satan, which was amazing. But I feel like he's had to defend himself by being like, hello, like this has been me.
It's astounding. Yeah. It's like he's young, he's very successful, like he's got that cute little body. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't he be like, June is busting out all over? But yeah. People are like, no, we want you to wear a cowboy hat and sing to my kindergarten class. What? Get out of here.
That was the out of character thing. This is the in character thing. And if anything, yeah, we need to be celebrating the fact that we don't have to hear goddamn Old Town Road anymore.
Right. Did he ever get the Dolly remix? I don't think he did.
Well, we can cross our fingers for the Dolly remix of Call Me By Your Name, though. Where in the world are you? You're in the UK?
I'm in that bustling hub of Baltimore, Maryland.
How has the past year been?
I mean, fine. I don't know. It's funny. I have to say, like, my work situation has changed so much over the past year. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to write for television shows that I really love in a way that I wouldn't have been able to because I live in Baltimore. But since we were doing it over Zoom, it became a possibility.
Right.
It also sort of opened this door for me to like leave Elle and explore different ways of being creative. Mm-hmm. So that was good. I feel very much like my dad. He's very much sort of oriented toward work and keeping his head down. He's not like, you know, a terrible 80s movie character where he's like, it's all about money.
Uh-huh.
He understands himself to be a breadwinner. And so like, that's sort of the way I understood myself this year. Personally, like a hot mess. But I'm like, well, I'm gonna go to work. I'm gonna get on my little Zoom. And then I'm going to get off of work and scroll Instagram for a couple of hours, send a lot of ill-advised DMs to my friends. And wait to go back to reality. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know. I've been thinking a lot about what reality will look like, and I have no answers. Not that anybody's looking to me for answers, but...
No. I mean, I think that's why people tune in. They're like, well, we got to figure out like what Matt says that we should do with ourselves after all of this.
I know. I almost got desperate enough pre-pandemic to join a gay kickball league.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did the same thing, actually.
Yeah. I signed up for the newsletter, all of the like lists, and it was literally like last April or March, and then everything shut down.
Yeah. No, I did the same thing. The kickball bar was like two blocks from my house, and I was really excited about that. And like, I was a team captain.
Oh, you went all in. Is that like the foreman of a jury where it's like not your choice and they just kind of just who everybody voted for?
That's exactly it. Everyone was like, I'm a really busy professional. And I'm like, I mean, me too, but I guess I am inclined to leadership. So I had to choose the team's t-shirt color. And then I got settled with all this like team building during the pandemic. They're like, don't lose touch with your team. And I'm like, I've never met these people. They were assigned to me.
Wait, so you signed up and then you've had to keep in touch with them even though no kickball has actually happened?
No kickball had happened. We were doing like, they were like workouts sometimes on Zoom. And then like they would have like a happy hour where some people would come. And it was fun, but it was also sort of like, we are all strangers. I'm sitting in my house drinking wine at my computer to people I've never met. And then I'm emailing this group of strangers and being like, hey, like our team name was the Bunt Cakes. I was like, hey, Bunt Cakes, hope you're having a cakey day or whatever. I don't know. Just like whatever. And now I thought maybe when all this is over, we will all have developed like an online friendship.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that did not happen. And nobody like responded.
Oh, no. Well, that was honestly, that inspired me to recommit to the effort. I can't do like a Zoom date. I have to see someone in person or else... Ironic because, you know, I talk to people on Zoom all the time, but
right.
No, it's too much.
Well, when it's work also, you turn it on, but it feels different when it's like, hey, these are my real life friends. Let's all get together and look at each other's screens. I'm like, no. Just save it. Save the good gossip. I'll see you when I see you. I'll get my second shot. We'll like hang out. And we can like download a year's worth of things that we didn't want to say into our laptops.
Right. Yeah, that is the other problem. I don't know if you feel this, especially as a writer, where it's you're basically pouring out your inner thoughts all the time anyway. So that when you talk to people, or is it like what's left? You've already like seen the bare soul on the internet.
I mean, it limits a little bit. Like one, I have a deep fear that I'm actually boring in real life because I don't want to perform.
Based on the half hour that we've known one another.
That's my limit. I'm like, a half hour, you're compelled. 45 minutes, you're like, actually, let me think more about that. No, I do feel like there are sort of writing topics and like pop culture like that I like to like talk about publicly and like write about or whatever. But like when I'm with my friends, I'm like, I want to do the same boring things over and over again. I want to go to like my favorite piano bar, have the same drink I always have, like sing Poor Unfortunate Souls from Little Mermaid. And I'm like, that's what I do. Like, that's where I am. So it does feel interesting when people are like, you must be so fun to hang out with. And I'm like, if you're looking for like a hot take about Meghan Markle at like a casual brunch, I probably don't have it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, honestly, I feel the same way. But yeah, I just think like that person to me, that personality would be exhausting if it was on all the time. Yeah. And so it's like, no. I the switch gets flipped, you know, once a week. And then the rest of the week, it is I'm plugged in and recharging. It's too much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know. I think there's some people who are like, I'm wild and crazy. I'm always a good time. And I like that person. I like being friends with that person. But then I'm the kind of person who's like, I have deep wells of eccentricity, mm-hmm. but it's not a constant sort of flow. It's very much like, I'm in front of a crowd. I'm on a show. Right. I'm writing. And then there are times where I'm like, I would like to not speak for maybe 3 to 4 days and just like read a book. And which is, I think, fine and interesting too.
I often feel like my personality is like the female orgasm. Like it's there, it can happen, but the circumstances have to be precise and exact.
That's fascinating. From what I've heard about the female orgasm, I mean, whatever. You know what? I'm out of my depth.
This is also me speaking wildly out of my comfort zone.
I'm like, I'm not sure. Sure, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever, whatever works.
Exactly. I want to move into our segment called Elaborate, which is where we'll have you elaborate on some tweets where you expressed your hatred of something.
Oh,
the first
excellent.
Of which is your hatred of commercials for regular stuff that acknowledge the reality of the pandemic.
Ooh, gets my biscuits. Because, oh my God, these commercials, because they started real early. They were like, hey, folks, don't we love drinking our Budweiser beer in our social distance hand washing? Yeah, we sure do. Times are tough. We're coming back. Don't try and sell me an ideal of life with the soap I should get or the under eye cream or the hyaluronic acid while somebody's wearing a mask. That's not my ideal life. Right. I don't want to see it. It makes me nuts.
It's the same category. Like, I don't want to go to Arby's and see the cashier in an Arby's branded mask. Okay.
Right.
We don't have to normalize this. Just put on a mask. I don't need to see the logo on your face.
Right. It's very strange because, like, I get it's important to be responsible, particularly in media depictions, so that we're all protecting each other and we're all safe. That said, it does feel like also when I see a commercial for something, for Arby's, and everyone's in a mask. First of all, I can't even get into the Arby's. You go through the drive-thru. So what are we talking about? What's happening? Yeah. What Arby's is it? Where are you? And second of all, that suggests to me that this is a permanent state of society.
Yeah.
And I'm not interested in that, you know?
No.
Show me the world as it was and as it could be in a safe and responsible way. It's kind of like when people are like tweeting in commercials. I'm like, okay, I don't.
Right.
Who cares? Like, this is the thing that I do that I'm very ashamed of. We don't need to like use it as a sales technique.
Yeah. There are certain things that we can just kind of collectively agree we should just kind of not acknowledge. And that is one of them. Yeah.
Please.
Also, full disclosure, I've never eaten at Arby's. So I don't even know why that came out. I don't know where my nearest Arby's is. Honestly, I feel like we could end on that note. Before we let you go, where can people find your breadth of work?
Well, everything is sort of consolidated on my website, which is rericthomas.com, all one word. I tweet at OurEric, OurEric. And if you want my newsletter directly, just go to letter.rericthomas.com. And if you go to any of those places, you'll find links to everything else because I took a marketing class once and I'm just trying to consolidate.
I mean, it shows. Well, thank you so much. This was so much fun.
This was wonderful. I really appreciate being asked, and I'm going to continue to silently like your Instagram post. And I have a lot of feelings about it.
I will take each one as a massive boost to my fragile ego. My ego is basically like on crutches most of the time. So I do feel like it is for the best. It's for the good.
I will contribute to a GoFundMe for your ego's recovery.
That's all I ask. That's really all I want. All right, we're almost there. We're almost at the end of the show. But first, our chasers. Chasers are the good stuff that help all the bad shit go down easier. Starting with Do Better White People, where we highlight some anti-racism resources and other actions we could take to make our world a little bit better. This week, I wanted to highlight something I've seen some people share more and more lately, especially as these conversations around police reform grow and continue, and that is knowing your alternatives to calling the police. So we've obviously seen again and again how police may not be the best call you can make. I know personally, living in New York, I see a lot of crazy stuff on the street. And there are times when I think, okay, if I ever had to call for help, I'd be worried about calling the police because who knows what's going to happen when they show up. You know, especially in a situation where it's like, okay, nobody is in immediate danger here. I don't want to make the situation worse. And luckily, there are places that specialize in that. So there's a website called don'tcallthepolice.com, which is basically a directory for a whole bunch of cities that have alternatives to calling the police in all of those cities. So for each place, they list a number of resources that offer emergency or crisis services, like hotlines that work with unhoused people, mental health hotlines, domestic violence hotlines. There's stuff for LGBTQ issues, like all of these things that is very helpful just to have in your back pocket. Hopefully you'd never have to use any of these things. Hopefully you're never in an emergency. But if you are, it's nice to have options, okay? Now, obviously, this is not like a perfect solution. This is a little bit of a homegrown, like community-based directory of resources and solutions. Even they point out on this website, you know, these resources aren't intended to cover all situations. And if you're in danger of immediate harm and you feel safe doing so, call 911. But while advocates are out in the world working towards police reform, trying to change police departments so that you can be confident in calling those kind of more official, I guess, government resources, having these kind of things in your back pocket, just on an individual level, having the city's page bookmarked on your phone, knowing your alternatives is an important thing. But yeah, we'll link to that in our show notes. You can familiarize yourself with your city if it's on there. If not, take a look at some of the other cities and the kinds of places that they list, and you might be able to find that on your own for the city that you live in. All right, let's move on to the TV we're watching this week. Barry, what you been watching?
Well, I finished The Mandalorian, and it was lovely. Beautiful. Just a joy. And I've continued rewatching Broad City, and it's just been so great. I loved that show. I love that show. It's been really fun to be in the process of rewatching it.
Yeah, it really is so good.
But nothing new yet. What about you? What are you watching?
Yeah, I haven't really watched anything new either. The Nanny still. I've been on the hunt for like good documentary series or movies. I started watching that Art Heist one on Netflix. I still just can't wrap my head. It's okay. So the Netflix documentary is about an art heist. It's the biggest art heist in history. The estimated value of the art that was stolen from this small little museum in Boston was, it was $500 million. Half Jeez. A billion with a B. And I don't understand that. I cannot wrap my head around why art is valued at what it's valued at. That is the one thing I pride myself on. Like, I was very intellectual in college. Okay. I got good grades. I understand a lot of stuff. I don't understand how art is valued. They try to explain it too about why someone would steal it. I don't understand. How are you going to fucking steal, like, what is his name? Rembrandt? Rembrandt. How are you going to steal a Rembrandt? It's worth nothing to you. You can't sell it anywhere. You can't walk into a pawn shop and be like, hey, I have a Rembrandt worth $200 million. It's useless the second you steal it. Anyway, the only good thing is that it is in Boston and they do have great accents.
Incredible. We'll be watching now that you told me that.
Stealing the art. I like the one lady is like, who do you think is, you think someone who works at the museum? No, I lost it. But she was like, you think someone like they're related to the mafia? Of course they are. Everyone in Boston is related. It's a small town. Anyway, what is your non-TV chaser?
My non-TV chaser is honestly just all of the wonderful feedback we've gotten for last week's episode. It just made me so happy to know that we were making so many people laugh and that they got a kick out of it. And that our stony baloney thoughts were were welcomed into people's ears.
Yeah. I mean, full disclosure, we had over an hour worth of recording.
Oh, that absolutely. Most of which was unusable.
Was whittled down in a moment of like, I don't know if anything will be usable from this. And the fact that a bunch of people loved it was great and gave us ideas for even more stuff.
It's true. So, yeah. What about you? Is that also your non-TV chaser this week?
Also that I'm very happy and I'm excited about to do other stuff with this concept, perhaps. My other thing was, okay, I've lived in this apartment for like 6 months now. Mm-hmm. I'm literally getting emails from the building being like, your lease is coming up. Like, and I, as you know, have nothing hung up. All of my pictures are all like leaning up against the walls. And I finally started hanging stuff up. And it is shocking the difference that it makes. So I hung up the most daunting thing, which was a mirror.
I like that you started with the hardest one. That's great.
Uh-huh. It required 5 screws. And yes, I did put 10 holes in the wall. Yeah, I nailed it in and then I realized it needed to move up by like 2 inches. So I had to re-screw in 5 more holes. But I was very proud that I did it all by myself and that I hung it up and that as of yet, it has not come crumbling down, knock on wood. So, yeah, slowly but surely hanging up the pictures. And by the time I'm finished, I'll be moving again.
Absolute Shiro.
That's it for this week's show. So thank you for listening to Unhappy Hour. If you want more Unhappy Hour shit, you can head straight to my Patreon page where you'll get what? Video of bonus worst things first stories cut from this week's episode. Video of extended guest complainer interviews. And a bunch of other fun stuff. You can also buy merch at unhappyhourshop.com. And as always, head to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audacy, that's AUDACY, or wherever you get this podcast, hit that subscribe button, rate us, review us. It really does help. Give us a rating if you have it. If you've been listening all this time and you haven't rated us and given us a nice review, are you even a fan? No! But only leave a comment if it's nice. I don't want to hear your shit. Unhappy Hour is a production of Pineapple Street Studios. It's produced by Barry Finkel, Melissa Slaughter, Yinka Rickford-Engwin, and me, Matt Belisai. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman and Max Linsky. Our music is by Hansdale Sue. You can bother Barry at FinkelBerryPie. You can worship me at Matt Belisai. You can follow Unhappy Hour Pod on Twitter for all the latest podcast buzz. You can leave us a voicemail on our rant hotline at 601-600-RANT. That's 601-600-7268. And that's it. That's everything. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye. What you want? Babe, I got it. What you need? You know I got it. All I'm asking is for the respect when you get home.
I have to pee so bad I'm sweating, so I need to leave. But that was great. Thank you. Bye.